Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, this is Money Talking. I'm Cardiff Garcia with the Financial Times, in for Charlie Herman. And it looks like $15 an hour will be the new minimum wage for fast food workers across New York. A wage panel appointed by Governor Andrew Cuomo has recommended that they get the raise they're asking for.
And what we believe in New York is that there should be opportunity for all. And there is fundamental fairness for all. And there is justice for all.
Cities like Seattle and Los Angeles have embraced the so-called fight for 15, and so have some policymakers in Congress. But the movement has also brought questions. Is $15 too high for some employers to pay? Should the minimum wage be the same everywhere? And should some industries be forced to pay it, but not others? And here to discuss this are two journalists who have been writing about the minimum wage, Josh Barrow of the New York Times and Raihan Salam from National Review. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Cardiff.
Thanks for having us.
Josh, economists once thought that a higher minimum wage was obviously great for those who received the higher pay and kept their jobs. But it would lead to fewer overall jobs because it obviously raises the cost of employing people. You've made the point that reality now seems a little more complicated. How so?
Well, I mean, over the last 25 years or so, economists have gotten to do a lot of actual empirical studies looking at what happens when you raise the minimum wage, and particularly looking at these border counties where you have one state that raises its minimum wage, and then you have an area right across a line where a lower wage is allowed. And what they've generally found is that the job effects that you see are either non-existent or quite small. And that suggests that what looked like a challenge trade-off where some people get a higher wage and other people can't find a job at all looks like actually a pretty favorable trade-off. Now, economists agree that, you know, there's a point where it becomes too high, and they disagree about what that exact point is. But it looks like at least within this range of minimum wages that is typically debated in the United States, it's mostly upside for low-skill workers in that some of them get higher wages and very few or maybe no people, depending on the study, actually lose jobs as a result of it.
So some ambiguity about where that point is. Raihan, you've written that you're skeptical of the push for 15 bucks. Is it because it's too high, because you think it's beyond that point?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of different issues at work. So, for example, there is also a lot of empirical work which suggests that about 100% of the cost of the higher wages is passed through to higher consumer prices. That kind of suggests that you're not seeing a huge productivity boon necessarily when you're paying people just automatically. But there's another issue, which is that, you know, because of what Josh pointed out, you've got these economists who are trying to find natural experiments. You're trying to get, you know, these small fleeting differences between counties that are kind of similar. But the thing is that if you're looking at small fleeting differences, you're not looking at the kind of long-term lasting effects that you might get, right? Think about like gas prices. If the gas price goes up a few cents, you're not immediately going to change how you consume gasoline. But what might happen is that over time, let's say when you have an opportunity to take a new job, you might commute a little bit less. Those are the really interesting long-term lasting effects, leaving aside the fact that higher consumer prices make a really big difference for lots of different groups of people.
Okay, so Josh, in your piece this week in the New York Times, you said that there might also be some distortions caused by the fact that in New York, for instance, the minimum wage is going to be paid by some employers in some industries, but not by all employers in all industries.
Yeah, I think you're going to get some problems related to the fact that it's only for fast food restaurants and only for those with at least 30 locations. I think if someone's looking to open a restaurant in New York, they'll be more inclined to open a non-chain one rather than opening a franchise. If you have a fast food chain with 25 locations, you might be disinclined to expand it because it's not a small wage increase. It's going all the way from about $9 an hour to 15, the distortions are going to be real. I think it would be better to do a more modest across-the-board minimum wage increase. But I don't think it's anybody's first-choice policy. The reason we're getting it is the governor can do this through his own power. A broader minimum wage increase would require the legislature.
I want to ask both of you about how we should regard employers who pay the minimum wage, because this conversation sometimes tends to be sort of binary. Either they're exploitative because they're hiring people and not paying them enough, or they're the entryway for people who don't have any other way of entering the job market and finding training. So what do you think, Raihan? How should we think about these guys?
My own view is that low-wage employers do exactly that. They provide training. And I think that, you know, when you're thinking about trainee employees, you've got to think that, well, maybe it makes sense because the employer is taking on a risk by hiring someone who is raw and untrained, that, you know, they might want to pay a somewhat lower wage. If you look at Australia, a country that has a higher minimum wage in the United States right now, they actually have all kinds of carve-outs. They have different wage rules for different sectors. They have them for different age groups. They have different minimum wage rules for apprentices, you know, because they have long experience in trying to implement this policy. And they see that if you don't if you aren't sensitive in those ways, then you actually might get some of the disemployment effects that we've been talking about.
So final question. What's an idea, one from each of you, that could either be a complement to or a substitute for a higher minimum wage that would help people out who've had their wages stagnant for so long, especially in the time since the end of the recession 5 years ago? Josh?
Well, I think minimum wage increases should be done to a reasonable level that doesn't push unemployment up too much and in conjunction with a higher earned income tax credit. Conservatives often talk about the earned income tax credit, which is basically a negative tax on people with low incomes, as a substitute for the minimum wage. In order to make sure that we give this benefit out to low-income workers and it really accrues to them, we need to do it in conjunction with minimum wage as a policy together. So I think the EITC is great. It's something conservatives and liberals can agree on, although conservatives tend to like talking about the EITC more than they like spending money on it. But it's really something that's a complement to the minimum wage, not a substitute for
Ryan?
I think one thing, I agree that the earned income tax credit is a great policy. We ought to pursue it. But I'd also mention that if you look at the United States compared to other market democracies, we have an unusually large number of adults who have low levels of literacy and numeracy. It's 1 out of 7 adults in the United States compared to, say, 1 out of 20 in Japan. And I think that that's why when we look to other market democracies to look at their policies and see what we can and can't import, we need to be sensitive to the fact that we have 15% of the workforce is foreign-born, and that's a disproportionately less skilled group that faces unique and difficult challenges. And I think that, you know, we need to think about how do we tighten the labor market for that group, and I think that how do we generally think about integrating that group so that we can upgrade its skills.
Okay. And before we go, in the coming days, weeks, and months ahead, what's one story that each of you is going to be following? Josh?
I'm going to be watching next week what everybody's going to be watching, the first Republican presidential debate with Donald Trump, and I'm going to see what stunts he pulls and whether anybody gets into a fistfight on stage.
Raihan?
I am really excited about the future of the interstate highway system. Congress has just passed a really bad measure, and I'm curious to see what happens next.
Raihan Salam with National Review and Josh Barrow with The New York Times. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Cardiff.
Thank you.
I'm Cardiff Garcia with The Financial Times, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.